If you're a fan of This American Life, you might remember a story a few years ago about a young Somali man who won the visa lottery to come to the U.S. Here he is describing the moment he got the news.
I put my confirmation number, I put my date of birth, and then click. There was a few seconds of silence. But then, you have been randomly selected. I walked out with these friends all, you know, shouting behind me, in front of me, you know, holding my hands, shaking me. My heart was bumping.
That's Abdi Noor Iftin. His story was told on This American Life by the world's own Leo Hornack. Now Iftin has a new memoir about his escape from Mogadishu and his changing impressions of his new home in the U.S. It's called Call Me American. In the book, he describes lying on his mother's lap as a child, as she told him stories of her youth herding goats and camels. I asked him what the stories meant to him.
They meant everything to me. It was a heroic story. It was a story of strength and perseverance. She would talk about the animals that she had and how much she loved them. Sometimes I look at myself in America, in Maine, you know, in New York, wherever I am, and how Americans love their dogs. See, they take to the vets, they spend so much money on this animal. And I'm like, you know, I used to say, why do they do this? And then I look back at my mother, I'll say, like, what if there was a vet in Somalia? My mother would take Dranle, which was the camel that was born on the same day that she was born. She loved that camel so much more than her life. She loved Essay, the goat, so much. So I would be thinking, there you go. This is exactly, I think, what it means. That's why the other world loved their dogs, you know, somewhere else. So mom would talk about those animals and how she misses it and how she misses the smell of the pee from the goats, you know, because she comes to the city and the city people would say, you smell like a pee. And she's like, that's great, isn't it? You know, because that to her, that's a wonderful thing. So she talks about how city is horrible and how people don't understand the value of her animals. And then she talks about the danger. And the danger is the wildlife, the predator, the lion, the hyenas, and how she would, as a little girl, bring a stick with her, go up, you know, into the wilderness with these hundreds of goats. You know, her parents are putting her in charge of bringing these animals out into the safety and bringing them all back home with no one missing. And if one is missing, you know, lions or hyenas or something, take one of the goats. She's, you know, she faces the punishment. You know, she gets beaten. So
who,
her job...
Who's she beaten by?
By her dad or her mom. And she was supposed to circle around and stay up all day and jump around and, you know, make all these kind of sounds to scare off the wildlife. So it was a tough job. Walking hundreds of miles every day and you have to come back to the same spot. She was just walking bare feet.
I also want to know about your father. I know in his day he was a well-known basketball player in Mogadishu. Did his stature as this well-known basketball player in the Somali capital help shape your life?
Before the war happened, we were pretty popular in Mogadishu as the basketball family. So,
Was he making a living playing basketball?
He was really making pretty good money. He went out into Iraq and some countries in the Middle East, and he played, and they won, and they came back with medals. So he brought some medals home, and we were part of that, of the Somali family that had food on the table all the time until everything falls apart. And, you know, I find myself watching the guy who we went to buy the snacks from, you know, being sprayed with bullets, and his face is down on the ground. So all hell breaks loose.
It's an amazing story because you're growing up, you're a teenager, and you're living this nice life. And then Somalia is swept up in this inter-clan conflict. Give us a before and after snapshot of Mogadishu.
Mogadishu sits on the Indian Ocean coast. It was called the City of Pearl. It was so beautiful. People used to come, and my dad and my mom talked about these Italians and Americans coming to the warm oceans of Mogadishu, you know, in their bikinis running around. It was just so beautiful. And it, you know, it was a commercial route. People from Iran, Turkey, lots of countries in the Middle East.
What about as the war got going? What visually changed?
The war happens very quick. Militias just arrive. Like, everything happens like a movie, right? It happens so fast. Militias come and they start spraying bullets on the roofs of houses, and they are stealing everything, looting everything. And we're walking down to the other end of the city trying to stay safe. And we stay in this place where a general who's a relative to us was living. And the general says, you know what? I'm going to catch the last boat that has to leave. Everything is happening. And then within the same night, the war comes to the same area. And then we flee out of the city into the wilderness, and the war comes to the wilderness. So it's like spreading like a volcano.
What year are we talking about now?
We're talking about in 1991.
Eventually, you manage to leave Somalia and you go to Nairobi, and that's where you win the visa lottery. And it's during that period that you read a paperback by a billionaire, and it's called The Art of the Deal. What did you make of its author?
I loved this person called Trump. I don't know. But I want to tell the audience, actually, I loved him because I didn't see him as a Trump who does not like immigrants. I saw him as an American. And to me, everybody who speaks American English, I thought that Arnold Schwarzenegger, Van Damme, Sylvester Stallone, Eddie Murphy, Denzel Washington, and all these people that I had seen in the movies, to me, were just wonderful and great. I didn't look at them as a Republican or a Democrat. So I read The Art of the Deal, smiling every bit of it, and I thought every sentence that I read was true. And I was like, wow, you know, look at this wonderful, successful story. I read it, and I kept that book in a very nice place, even though we lived in a rough life in Nairobi. But we didn't have a shelf, actually. But I left it somewhere under my bed at some point, you know, so that nobody has to steal it, because I had so many friends coming in and out. So I thought he was a wonderful, successful American.
Fast forward many years, and you fight your way through the immigration bureaucracy. You get to America in 2014, and you settle in Maine. And it's the whitest state in the U.S., and you start working on a construction crew with a home insulation company. Do your coworkers make you feel welcome?
No, they do not. I kind of found myself in the middle of this tribe, like the Somali tribe, right? At this construction thing, everybody knows everybody else's life. I was this stranger, and they have this main accent. They talk about their wives, tattoos, games that they play, wrestling, all of these things that I have no understanding about. When they asked me to say something, I talked about my stories and they were not interested. This is the part of America that I never thought existed. So I could never blend in, even though I tried as hard as I could. These guys can't even go to Canada because they had been arrested before and they don't have passports and all of this. To me, it was like a gang.
And then what's interesting is you later find out that these construction workers, the guys you were working with, to a person voted for President Trump. Did that have any impact on your relationship with them?
Yes. Kind of Trump showed them the way, right? And Trump comes to Portland, to my city, and he says things about Somalis and kind of, you know, calling for his supporters in Maine to start thinking that we're evil, we're bad people. You know, that's how it happened. And then there was all of these altercations happening at Walmart to the Somali people, Somali women, and I was freaked out. But then the other thing is, oh, this is it. These guys that I thought a tribe is actually not only a small tribe, it's a larger tribe. It's all over the country. It's from everywhere. They have no understanding on immigrants, and they have no understanding on what we have been through all this time. And they think that we come to the U.S. to steal, to take, but not to accept and be part of it, which is completely not true.
What's next for you, Abdi?
That's a good question. Well, I'm going to college, and I have a future. And believe it or not, even though I'm in my early 30s now, but I feel like I was just born a little less than 4 years ago when I moved to the United States. You know, I'm just trying to catch up and do everything that I can to find education and support my family and eventually be able to bring them over here and have them very close to me, because I'm going to be American, right? But I'm also going to be a world man, you know, someone who's interested in supporting and helping everybody else out there. And I've been a refugee, you know, and I know how hard it is. And I might, you know, be able, when I finish college, and just do something out there as an American, a proud immigrant, a proud Somali, to be able to do something. But most importantly, I would start with my family.
Abdi Noor Iftin has written a memoir. It's called Call Me American. Thank you so much, Abdi.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.